Namacharya, Srila Haridasa, Jai Brendan Sega, Sri Krishna Chaitanya, Parabha Nityananda, Shidwaita Gadadha, Shivasiddhi Gaur, Bhaktivinoda Kijai, Shri Shri Radhakrishna, Gopa Govinda Sayam Kundarakunda, Giri Govardhan Kijai, Vrindavanam Kijai, Mataram Kijai, Navadipyam Kijai, Jagannathaswami Kijai, Yamunamai Kijai, Srimati Lasidevi Kijai, Samveda Bhakta, Vrindavanam Kijai, Gaur, Premananda, Hari Hari Gopa. All glory is the assembled devotees, all glory is the assembled devotees, all glory is the assembled devotees. All glories to Shri Guru and Gauranga Srila Prabhupada ki jai. So, Om Gananath, Timidanda Shah, Gananjana, Shlakaya Chakshur, Meditam, Yena Tasmai, Shri Guru Venamaha. And as I mentioned, we're going to discuss the events leading up to the Mahabharat War before the Bhagavad Gita was spoken. Now, I did quote this one verse. From the Bhagavad Gita, before I chanted Jai Radha Madhava, Yada Yada Hi Dharma Shaglani Bhavati Bhavata, whenever there's a rise in new religion and a decline in new religion and the demons become present, then Krishna advances, Trijamiyaham, Krishna advances himself. And he advances for the purpose of Parichanaya Sadhana Vinashaya Cha Duskritam. But one thing that's very interesting about the whole Mahabharat war and the events leading up to the Mahabharat is that most of the killing or annihilation is not being done by Krishna. It's being done by his devotees, which is really interesting. Of course, ultimately, it is being done by Krishna. As Krishna says in the Gita, 11th chapter, Mitchu Sarva Harashaham, I'm all devouring death. And when Arjuna sees this universal form, he sees all the soldiers marching into the mouths of the universal form, which has multifarious, you know, unlimited heads, and they're being chewed up by this universal form. So ultimately, it is Krishna. Although Krishna, generally in the Mahabharata, is acting through his devotees and other entities to accomplish this particular purpose. And this is generally the principle, that Krishna doesn't have to come down to this earth planet to establish religious principles, protect the devotees, annihilate the miscreants. All these things can be accomplished by Krishna's devotees, Krishna's energies, especially the time factor is doing that. Kalo Asmi, that is a manifestation of Krishna. The time factor is taking away the life of everyone. It is killing everyone. Everyone's getting older. You don't get younger. I remember many years ago, before any of you were born, there was one person who was looking for the fountain of youth in Florida. It was before my time, too. His name was Ponce de Leon, but he didn't find the fountain of youth. Of course, the expert Ayurvedic physicians in the heavenly planets, like the Ashwini Kumaras, they do have a lake like that. There was that one story of that sage, Chayavanamudi. He was very old and wrinkled. He married a young girl. He wanted to be more compatible with her. So he had them put him into this lake, and he came out as a handsome young man. But at least in this planet, don't go looking for that lake. This time factor is actually taking away the life of every single living entity. So basically, Krishna doesn't have to come down to do all that. However, he does come down for several purposes of his own. One purpose is to display his wonderful, attractive pastimes. Otherwise, people would be left to speculate upon the nature of God. As we find in the Western world, most theologians, they speculate about God. You know, is he the prime mover? Does he just kick off the football season, and then just stand aside? Is he an old man, like in Michelangelo's depiction of God? He's just like an old man with a beard and his arthritis and rheumatism and some other problems too, heart disease, needs a transplant. So, is that the way God is? So, if we have to imagine, engage in imaginative iconography, it's described, then we sort of come up with all these different interesting depictions of God. And depending on our particular culture, we'll depict God a different way. Like, I'm from America, naturally I would depict God as an American. And those of you from India would depict God as an Indian. And those of you from Africa would depict God as an African. And those of you from China, you know, you would depict God as Chinese. It's because people project like that. And if animals had God, like a horse had God, he'd depict God as a horse. Of course, all those depictions are not necessarily wrong because God, Krishna, appears in every single species of life, which is interesting. And so God does appear in every single, let's say, race and within this earth planet and everything, every single species, like horse species, you know, the Hayagriva incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And God even appears in manifestations that aren't exactly a species or a combination of a species, like a half man, half lion. So he does appear like that. However, in his original form, Eti Changsa, Kalakpumsa, Krishna's two, Bhagavan Swayam, he's Krishna with two hands holding a flute in Goloka Vrindavan. So Krishna comes basically to show us these original pastimes of himself so we can become attracted to worshiping him and loving him. Beyond worship, there is love. Worship is engaged in to develop love. Worship is not simply done, or should not be simply done, as a business exchange that I am worshiping you and I get something in return. Like you go and work in your workplace, and most of you have jobs or you have business, and you get something in return for it. So ultimately, we're meant to love Krishna, and that love comes from attraction to his form, his activities, his qualities, all those things, his devotees. So this is the most essential reason, as far as we're concerned, for Krishna's appearance. Another internal reason for Krishna's appearance is that sometimes he likes to have a good old fight. And there's no good old fights, you know, with no rules in the spiritual world. In the spiritual world, they have spiritual bodies, and the fights are kind of fun. They're like kids playing cops and robbers or something like that. But in the material world, the fights are extremely serious. So Krishna likes to have a serious wrestling match or a serious disc-throwing match. He throws his disc and cuts off demons' heads like he did with Shishupala. So anyway, so that's another esoteric or internal reason why Krishna appears. So we got the exoteric, which is destroying the miscreants, establishing religious principles, protecting the devotees, and the esoteric, which is basically his own purposes and for our purpose too, to bring us out of this material world, because the whole purpose of the material world is to get out. That's called teleology, the study of purposes. So we're here to get out. We're not here to stay. Got that? Okay, that's important. So now let's start with the whole Mahabharata, and hopefully we'll get through the whole thing without going on till midnight tonight. So anyway, we'll try to do this within the space of 45 minutes. So once upon a time, as all stories start, there were demons. That means people who just, like, were atheists or scientists who didn't believe in God. Scientists aren't necessarily demons. They can be very nice and believe in God. But the people just like anthropologists, you know, who just try to tell everybody that everything came about because of evolution. So, but these were, let's say, celestial people who didn't believe in God. People with more powers than us. You know, we don't believe in God. You know, we can't really harm too many people except by publishing books or going on the internet or something like that. Like that Hawkins. You know, this is innocent, you know, little thing. So, but in the higher planets, when they don't believe in God, they go and conquer the people who do believe in God, and they give them all sorts of problems. So those people are called devas. So there's devas and danavas or daichas. So you got this conflict going on in the universal level. This is something, I guess, like Star Wars or Star Trek or something like that. And most of these films that deal with this sort of universal or multi-planetary conflicts, they were actually written with the Vedas in mind, with the Mahabharata and other Vedic literatures in mind, and especially Star Wars. I'm not going to get into describing Star Wars, don't worry, the class is not about that, although some of you would like that. So there's this interplanetary battle going on, and sometimes the demons, that is, the Daityas, the Danavas, they have to go somewhere to hide out or to get their forces together, like to create a Death Star or something like that, so to give trouble to the rest of the universe. You don't have to combine their forces, meet, and sort of arrange a plan to do something. Okay, so they decided to come down here to the Earth planet, of all places. I guess it's a very hospitable place. So they decided to come down and sort of unify their forces there. And the what happened is that the Earth, there's a personification of the Earth. She's called Bhumi. She went to Lord Brahma and complained about this because it was quite a burden when you have all sorts of people who don't believe in God and you're the Earth. So she went to Lord Brahma. Lord Brahma, he went to the shore of the Ocean of Milk and he meditated and he got a transmission from Krishna, from Lord Vishnu. And the message was, you should go down to the Earth planet. I'm coming down. You know, Lord Vishnu is coming down. Of course, that's Krishna who was the source of Lord Vishnu. I'm coming down to the Earth planet. And the rest of you should come down to assist me in these pastimes to conquer over this burden that the Earth has to endure right now. So, therefore, that was preliminary to the whole description in the Mahabharata. And then what happened is that there were several instances that even they appeared inauspicious, like curses and other things that occurred, but that actually helped with the Lord's pastimes. One instance is there was one great personality named Mahabish. And Mahabish was a great king in the line of Ikshvaku. And so he was in the heavenly planets because he had performed 1,000 horse sacrifices. That's how you go to the heavenly planets. If any of you want to know, you got to do 1,000 horse sacrifices. But you got to have the horse come out of the fire alive and with a better body, or a human body. So if you can do that, you go up to the heavenly planet. And you have to be able to complete the 1,000 horse sacrifices without having Indra interfere. That's also problematic. So otherwise, just chant Hare Krishna. It's a lot easier. And then you go back to Krishna. So this Mahabishi went to the heavenly planets. And as he was in the heavenly planets, he was watching a dancing performance because they have a lot of interesting dancing there in the heavenly planets. And it was in Lord Brahma's assembly. And there was a little wind, and Ganga Devi, the original Ganga Devi from whom the Ganges is named, or after whom the Ganges is named. So Ganga Devi, her sort of like skirt blew up in the wind, and it came up. The wind was blowing. And this Mahabish, you know, he didn't, let's say, have the common sense to look away. I mean, usually if something like that happens, like Krishna was fighting one demon one time, Vanasura, and this goddess who Vanasura was worshipping tried to defend Vanasura against Krishna, and she came out naked like that. And what did Krishna do? He looked away. Yuck! And therefore Vanasura was able to escape for some time. Ultimately, you know, he had some hand operations or arm operations and had most of his arms chopped off. But at least for the time being, he escaped. So Mahabish looked at Ganga Devi, like that. And what happened is that Lord Brahma saw that and he said, you've committed a great offense. You have to be cursed to take birth on the Earth planet. And so Ganga Devi, she was also attracted. She liked the attention. So she was also attracted. And so it was arranged that Ganga Devi and this Mahabish would come down to the Earth planet. Of course, Mahabish later on became Shantanu, this great Shantanu, who was the predecessor of the whole Kuru dynasty, one of the predecessors of the Kuru dynasty. So at the similar time, you know, around the same time, something else happened. The Vasus, the eight Vasus, they offended Vashishtha Muni by trying to steal his Kama Dhenu, his desire cow. And when they did that, they were cursed to come down to the Earth planet, and they begged for forgiveness. And basically, the mitigation of the curse was that seven of them would have a very short life. But the one who was personally responsible for trying to steal the Kamadhenu, his name was Jal, he would take the lifespan of all of them and live a very, very long life. And so basically, they were real worried. They didn't want to come down to the Earth because heavenly planets are a lot nicer than the Earth planet. And so they approached Ganga Devi, and they said, please become our mother. So she agreed, we'll become your mother. I'll become your mother, and we want a short life, but you know this last one you got to let live for a longer time, this job. Okay, so Mahavish comes down to the Earth planet, and he's by the Ganges River, and he's around there, and he sees this beautiful girl, who's Ganga Devi, come out of the river. Shantanu comes, sees her come out, and he thinks, wow. Because Kshatriyas are very passionate, try to understand. Brahmanas are not like that. But when Kshatriyas see a beautiful girl, it's all over. You know, the first thing they do is they look to see if she has a ring, a red dot on her forehead. And if she doesn't, hello, like that. And so Shantanu said, I can see you're not married. Will you marry me? And Ganga Devi said, I thought you would never ask. So... So she said, yes, but there's a prenuptial agreement. And that prenuptial agreement is that you will never disagree with me. Not even once. You can't argue or disagree with all you ladies would love to have that sort of agreement with your husband. Never argue, never disagree. Whew, submissive husband there. So he was so much in love. Because when one is in love, they sort of forget everything else, isn't it? It's sort of bewildering. It's very bewildering. Krishna. I guess he didn't like that point. He'll understand that later on in life, but not right now. It's hard, you know, when you're that young to understand these things. So basically, he agreed to all the preconditions. And so they got married, and what she proceeded to do is to throw each and every child that was born of her, each son, into the Ganges River and basically kill them. And they left their bodies. There's no death, of course. And he was just like thinking, oh, I can't say anything. You know, poor guy was completely, completely depressed, you know, in anxiety. And so finally... The eighth son appeared, and she was getting ready to kill the eighth son, and he couldn't restrain himself. It was too much, you know. Here's this lady killing all of her children. So he said, stop. And she said, you disagreed with me. I'm out of here. So she left, and she took the eighth son, and that eighth son, of course, later became Bhishma. Shantanu, Shantanu, he hadn't learned his lesson about falling in love yet. So later on, Bhishma came back, and Bhishma was helping his father. You know, he was a grown boy, at least a young man at that time. And Shantanu said, you can become the next king. It's called Yuvaraj. You can become the next king. You're the prince. And he sort of commemorated or inaugurated him as the next king, you know, the prince. Crown Prince, it's called. So then Shantanu was out again, and he was, hunting or out in the forest. And then he happened to see this very beautiful girl, Satyavati. And this Satyavati was ostensibly a fisherman's daughter, but she actually wasn't. She was the daughter of the King Vasu. Somehow or other, she had been put into the belly of a fish, and she was caught by the fishermen. I'm not going to tell that whole story. It's real complicated how that happened. And she previously had a horrible smell. It smelled like a fish. And then she had gotten a good smell when she had had some interaction with Parashara Muni and Vyasadeva was born. But that's another story right there. Vyasadeva was born on an island. And so she had such an amazing smell for 8 miles, as described. Ganda Yojana, I think was what it was called. Like Yojana, 8 miles. The people would faint just by smelling. Previously, she smelled like a fish, and people would faint too. Because nobody likes, at least we do not like the smell of a fish. So, therefore, Shantanu fell in love with her. And he went to her father, and her father said, basically, the father of the fisherman, said, you can marry her, but her son has to become the king. And he thought, I've already promised this to Bhishma. And so he went into a deep depression, and there were no psychiatrists around to deal with that depression, to give him any Prozac or anything. He was just depressed, and Bhishma, his son, was just thinking, what's happened with my father? You know, he went to his father and said, be happy, Dad. You know, cheer up. And his father goes, huh. And he said, what's wrong, Dad? And his father said, huh. I can't tell you. So eventually, he asked his father's assistant, the prime minister, you know, what's happening? His father's assistant said, your father fell in love again. You know how it is when he falls in love. And the problem is, he can't marry her unless this and this and this happens. You know, her son, the girl's son becomes the next king, and you've been promised to be the next king. So your father's depressed. He doesn't want to break this promise. So Bhishma at that time went to the fisherman, Matsyaraj, that means kingfish or something like that, the king of the fishermen. Interesting name. He said, my dear Matsyaraj, that's also a name of Krishna's incarnation, Matsyaraj. My dear Matsyaraj, I'd like my father to marry your daughter. And Matsyaraj gave his conditions, and he said, no problem. I vow that I will never become the king. And Matsyaraj said, well, there's another problem, that your son may actually want to become king or something in the kingdom. And he says, I vow I will never, never, never get married. So Bhishma vowed like that, and that's why he's called Devavrata. That means the vow, the heavenly vow, or the, you know, the really intense vow. So, therefore, Shantanu married Satyavati, and they were very happy together. They didn't live happily ever after. Nobody does in this material world. But they had two children. Two children was Chitrangada and Vichitravirya. Now, Chitrangada was killed by Gandharva of the same name. And Vichitravirya, he had his marriage arranged by Bhishma. Because even though Bhishma had taken a vow to be a brahmachari, that didn't mean he couldn't be a marriage broker or matchmaker. So Bhishma kidnapped these three girls, Amba, Ambalika, and Ambika, and he brought them for his, I guess his brother, cousin brother, whatever. He brought them for Vichitravirya. And Vichitravirya, of course, one of them, Amba, he had to send back. Because Amba was actually in love with Salvaraj, and then she got rejected by him. And then she tried to marry Bhishma. Bhishma had a fight with his own spiritual master, who was saying that he should marry Amba. And Bhishma defeated his own spiritual master, Parashuram. And that Amba took a vow later on to be the source of the death of grandfather Bhishma. Okay? But that we'll get to in a second. So, therefore, Ambika and Ambalika, that means little Amba and very little Amba. If you want to really know the meaning of the names, it's like a diminutive. Little Amba, like. Anyway, same thing as in English. So, Vichitravirya, he was in ecstasy. Wow, these two beautiful girls, I didn't have to fight, I didn't have to win them. And he just, like, started to enjoy life. Like, they were feeding him grapes all the time, or whatever they did in the palace. And you know what happens when you engage in too much sense gratification? The bodily energy becomes diminished. It's called the ojas. And he passed away before he had any offspring. So then they had a problem. a big problem because there was no one who would have children. There was no one to carry out the dynasty, no one to become the king because Bhishma had vowed not to become the king. He also vowed not to have children. So Satyavati went to Bhishma and said, gee, you know, you got to break your vow for this one. You know, there has to be some offspring to take care of the kingdom. And Bhishma said, no, there's no way. And Satyavati revealed to Bhishma at that time. He revealed to Bhishma that actually there's a way we can do this without engaging you. Because previously, before I married your father, I gave birth to Vyasadeva. And Vyasadeva hasn't taken any of those vows. And he said that he will come every time I call him and think of him. So she just like sat down and thought, Vyasadeva Namaha. So Vyasadeva appeared and said, Mata, what do you want me to do? And she said, see these two girls that were married to Vichitravirya, Ambika and Ambalika? You should have children by them so they can continue the dynasty. And he said, well, I have to listen to my mother's order, because in those days people did listen to their mothers, not like nowadays, because mother knows best. So he said, can we wait a year? Because right now I'm engaged in austerities, my hair is all matted. Matted means they would take the sap of the tree and put it in their hair. They had long hair, the sages. So there was no question of combing anymore. Even Lord Rama did that when he was in exile. Did you know that? There's no question of, like, vanity. If your hair is all like that and all sticky, you can't be very vain. And one reason why we, some of the men, shave their heads is so to get rid of the vanity. I remember the first time I shaved my head, it felt like a whole, the weight of the world was lifted from my shoulders. I said, wow, because previously I looked like Satya Sai Baba with a beard. So Vyasadeva had this matted hair and beard and everything like that, and he was really thin and drawn. He was engaged in austerities, hadn't eaten properly for a long time. So he said, look, it's not going to be auspicious. You know, they're going to be frightened to death. But Satyavati said, no, right now, it has to use so much anxiety. You have to do it. He said, all right, I'm warning you. And so then he went to Ambika first. And when she saw him, she just closed her eyes. Yuck! You know, just like he looked frightening to an ordinary mortal. I mean, for someone who was a spiritualist, he you could see his effulgence. He was Krishna conscious. He's an incarnation of God. I mean, any of you ladies would accept him as a husband immediately. But to an ordinary mortal with material vision, he was frightening. So she closed her eyes, and as a result, Dhritarashtra was born. Dhritarashtra, who was born blind spiritually and materially. So Ambalika heard what had happened. She said, I'm not going to close my eyes when he comes to me. And so he came to Ambalika, and she kept her eyes open, you know, somehow or other. But she turned white. Like that. And you're completely white. You know, she couldn't breathe or whatever. And as a result, Pandu was like white, completely, almost completely white skin. He was born, and he was a little sickly because of that. And so Satyavati, she was thinking, we want another one. One more. So she asked Ambika again, you know, she have a relationship. This time you learned your lesson. Don't close your eyes and don't get scared. And so she said, this is too much. I'm not going to put up with this again. So she substituted her maidservant, who was a great devotee of Lord Krishna. And her maidservant, when she saw Vyasadeva, would just like bow down at his feet, touch his feet, offered him some prasadam, served him. And she had spiritual vision, so she could see his actual form. And so, as a result of that union, Vidura was born, who was Yamaraj. The reason Yamaraj came down is because he was cursed. He made a little mistake. He had punished a sage for something that the sage did when he was a little kid. The sage Mandavya Muni, he had pierced an insect with a piece of grass, and that he punished the sage by having the sage pierced with a lance. And they couldn't even get the lance out after they realized the sage was innocent, you know, because the king did that. And therefore, he's called the sage with the lance. It was still in there. At least the broken piece was in there. So the sage cursed Vidura, or Yamaraj, you've made a mistake, so you have to take birth as the son of a Shudra. And so Prabhupada commented in that regard that if people in a responsible spiritual position make a mistake, they have to take birth as a Shudra in the next life. So it's a great responsibility to have, let's say, a position of a sannyasi or a leader in a spiritual movement, that you make a serious mistake, then that's it. Next life. You understand? So that's why Prabhupada said in Vrindavan, does anyone here been to Vrindavan? You've seen all the monkeys in Vrindavan? They were spiritualists who made big mistakes in their last lives. And that mistake was there were sannyasis who had some, let's say, illicit interaction with women. And Prabhupada said the pigs and the monkeys are previously sannyasis. So you can go around calling them Maharaj. Bandara Maharaj. Bandara, it means monkey in Hindi anyway. And so they have people selling. If you go around Vrindavan or Govardhan, there's people selling like these little fried beans and also bananas. Things. So Bandar Seva, to serve. And it's all right to serve them because they were sannyasis in their last life. So anyway, so that's why Vidura took birth, and he was previously Yamaraj. So, of course, Vidura was the most learned person amongst all the brothers. Okay, so you have the three brothers there, Vidura, Dhritarashtra, and Pandu. And so these three brothers got married. Pandu married Kunti, and at her Swayamvara there was no fighting either because he was so handsome, she just like, wow, I got to have him. So that was how he married Kunti. And Kunti is incidentally the brother of who? Vasudeva, who is Krishna's father. So see, she's related with Krishna. Nice, isn't it? Cousin, Krishna's cousin. Very nice. So Bhishma also arranged that Madri would marry Pandu. Mm. And Dhritarashtra married Gandhari. And Gandhari was from Afghanistan. Kandahar, right? That's why she's called Gandhari. It's interesting. Because India was far greater in size than it is today. So she came from Afghanistan, but she was so chaste to Dhritarashtra. Dhritarashtra, we mentioned before, is blind materially and also spiritually, that she bound her eyes and vowed never to look out for the rest of her life. One time she opened her blindfold up, but that's in the Mahabharata War, which we're not going to talk about today. So she was not spiritually blind, though. She was only materially blind because of the blindfold. She was able to advise Dhritarashtra. Dhritarashtra, most of the times, did not follow her advice. So what happened is that there's this whole story of the Pandu could not directly have children himself by his wives because he had committed a great mistake. He had killed the sage Kindama when the sage had taken on a deer form to associate with his wife. So he got cursed. Pandu got cursed that if he ever associated intimately with either one of his two wives, that would be it, curtains. You know, basically the kiss of death. So Pandu basically went to the woods and he thought, I'm not going to have anything to do. His wives followed him in the woods. So he thought, I'm going to be a nice vanaprastha, not have any intimate relationship with my wives. So, but he still wanted sons. So Kunti had this mantra, his wife Kunti, had this mantra whereby she could call the demigods and have children with the demigods. And that's how Yudhisthira, who is the son of Dharmaraj or Yamaraj, was born. And Bhimsen, who is the son of Vayu, he's Vayuputra, and Arjuna, who is the son of Indra, as well as Nakula and Sahadev, they came from Madri, who borrowed Kunti's mantra for a while. Kunti didn't want to let her have the mantra anymore because she thought if she got two that time, maybe she'll call for, you know, someone who has five manifestations and have five kids, and then she'll be me. So later on, of course, Pandu passed away when he was attracted to Madri and he tried to embrace her. But let's go back to Dhritarashtra and Gandhari. Dhritarashtra and Gandhari also wanted to have children. And Vyasadeva had predicted that they would have 100 children. So Gandhari basically gave birth to a lump of flesh. And so she was thinking Vyasadeva's prediction has not come true. So Vyasadeva said, no, all my predictions come true. Just take this lump of flesh, divide it up into 100 parts, put them each in a little incubator, a Vedic incubator, that means with ghee and other things like that, and there'll be children there. So they divided this up and they discovered 101 instead of 100 because Gandhari actually wanted a daughter too. And then there was another son who was born, his name was Yutsu, but he was born between Dhritarashtra and a maidservant. And Yutsu fought on the side of the Pandavas later on in the Battle of Kurukshetra. So, all right, so you had both groups of sons. Incidentally, Duryodhana, who was the first of the 100 to pop out of these little ghee pots, he appeared at the same time as Bhimsen did, basically the same time. But when Duryodhana appeared, he howled like a jackal instead of cried like a child. And Vidura, seeing that inauspicious sign, said, get rid of this kid, you know, put him up for adoption. And they didn't want to do that because Vidura said, this kid will become the destruction of the entire dynasty. But still, because Dhritarashtra was attached and Duryodhana actually manifested the qualities of Dhritarashtra in full. In other words, the blindness, spiritual and material, not material blindness, but the spiritual blindness, the envy of his brother Pandu, because he was not able to be king, because even though he was older than Pandu, because he was blind. They didn't make blind people kings at that time because they had to fight battles. And a blind person is not so good at fighting battles, you know, in the front of the army. So, but the firstborn was actually Yudhisthira. So he was the oldest of all the cousin brothers that appeared. In fact, it was his birth. When he appeared first, that caused Gandhari's frustration so that she punched her womb so that she gave birth to the lump of flesh instead of, like, children at that point. And that lump of flesh was divided, as I mentioned before. Okay, going on with the story. They all came back after Pandu died because he had embraced Madri. The sons of Pandu came back to the kingdom. And they were received very, very nicely. But at the same time, Duryodhana and company, assisted by his wonderful uncle, Shakuni, who is Gandhari's brother. And Shakuni was very, very envious. They have made my sister marry this blind person. She was so upset about that. He was so upset about that that he thought, I'm going to be the cause of the destruction of the entire dynasty. He wanted to destroy everything. That was his mentality. He was so angry. So the little children, at least Dhritarashtra's children, were planning on ways to get rid of Pandu's kids. And so one way they had was they tried to poison Bhimsen. They gave him a meal, a big meal, and Bhimsen liked to eat. He's called Vrikodara, means wolf belly. So he liked to eat a lot, so they thought, we'll just give him this poison porridge, wrap him up, throw him in the river. But they did not calculate that when Bhimsen sunk to the bottom of the river, these snakes would bite him. And these snakes actually counteracted the poison. And he was later taken to the snake kingdom and given this Rasa Kundala, which made him impervious to all poison and stronger than ever, stronger than millions of elephants. simultaneously. So Bhimsen became like the greatest superhero, greater than any of the superheroes you have nowadays. He was completely invulnerable. So Bhimsen, twice they tried to poison him. Second time he just like digested the stuff. It was no problem. So there was continual conspiracy to try to kill the sons of Pandu. Many conspiracies occurred. Later on, of course, there was the conspiracy of the House of Lack in Varnabhat, where they tried to burn the Pandavas, and the Pandavas then went into hiding after that. So both the Pandavas, before that happened, both the Pandavas and the Kurus, that is the sons of Dhritarashtra and the sons of Pandu, they schooled together in the ashram of Dronacharya. Dronacharya was a great personality who was had some problems with his previous friend Drupada, who was a king, because they had grown up together. Drupada and Dronacharya had grown up together as friends, and Drupada, who was a king, not a Brahmin, Dronacharya was a Brahmin, Drupada had told Drona that I will give you half of whatever I have later on in life. So later on, Drona went to Drupada and said, you know, where's my present? Where's my Christmas present or whatever? And Drupada said, who are you? You know, I may have said something when I was young and your friend, but now, come on, Brahmin. You know, give him some pakoras or something like that and get rid of him. So Drona was so angry at that point, he vowed to take away the whole kingdom from Drupada. And the methodology he was going to employ was to utilize his students, the Pandavas and the Kurus, to conquer Drupada and give the kingdom to him. So he trained up the Pandavas and the Kurus very, very nicely in the martial arts, and with this intention. Remember, it wasn't a pure brahminical intention. It was actually more like a kshatriya intention. You know, someone who's been offended, then they just want to get even. So he trained them up with that intention. The Kurus weren't able to conquer Drupada, but the Pandavas were. And the Pandavas turned Drupada over to Drona. And Drona was extremely happy with the Pandavas for that. But Drupada, who got half of his kingdom back, at that point he was thinking, I got to get even with this Brahmana. And so Drupada, in order to get even with Drona, he had a sage perform a sacrifice whereby he could get a son who could kill Drona. So while they were performing the sacrifice, it came time for his wife to come. His wife's name was Kripi, who was the sister of Kripa. They were both born from a jar. That's a different story. We don't have time to tell. So anyway, incubator jar. So Kripi was married to him, and so Drupada. I'm talking about Drupada, not Drona. So Drupada, it came time for Drupada's wife to come forward in the sacrifice and get the milk or whatever she was going to take in order to have a child. And she said, no, I need more time to decorate myself. And the sage performing the sacrifice got so angry, looking at him, he said, we're going to have the child without the mother. And so he threw the ingredients very angrily into the fire, and out came Dhrishtadyumna, great warrior. And then right after that came who? Draupadi, who was also known as Krishna, because she had the same complexion as Krishna. She was also Krishna's friend. They were very close friendship. She would call Krishna Sakha, and he would call her Saki, means friend. So there was that friendship, not conjugal relationship, friendship relationship. Later on, of course, she got married to the Pandavas. Okay, so let's go back to the Pandavas. Let's see how much time we're taking. It's going pretty quickly, I think. So let's go back to the Pandavas. So what happened? The Pandavas are in the House of Lack, where there was the attempted killing. Duryodhana and company sent them there. They said it was going to be a vacation. But actually, it was a vacation that was meant to kill them. So instead, they understood what had happened because Vidura gave them a hint. In very secret language, he gave them a hint, this house is going to burn down. You better escape through a tunnel. He also sent someone who could dig out a tunnel, an excavator. That doesn't mean a machine, a man, who could dig out a tunnel. So they escaped, and they were able to burn the person who had made the house, whose name was Parochana. And so they escaped, but they went into hiding because they didn't know what other plans that the Kurus had. And when they went into hiding, many, many interesting things happened. Bhima happened to marry this very beautiful girl, Hidimbi. I'm not going to tell that story. And they had Ghatakach as their son, who was one of the great superheroes, another great superhero in the Mahabharata war. And Bhima also killed this other demon, Vakasura, when they were hiding out as brahmanas in Ekachakra. That's a very interesting story, because this demon, or this Rakshasa, had made a deal with the village. He said, I'll protect the village, I won't harass you, but just got to give me one person every month to eat. And so it came time for the Pandavas were in hiding, staying in someone's house, a Brahmin's house, and it came time for that particular family to give someone. So they were arguing amongst themselves, who are you going to give? Each one wanted to sacrifice their life for the family. But Kunti said, you know, here's my son. Don't worry, he can go. And they were thinking, how can we sacrifice the son of a guest? And she said, don't worry, you know, he can take care of this Rakshasa. So Bhimsen went with his whole cart of food to feed the Rakshasa, and he looked at the food and he thought, why waste it on some stupid Rakshasa? I want to eat the food. So he was eating the food outside of the Rakshasa's cave, and the Rakshasa sort of heard the chewing, and he came out and said, what are you eating my prasadam for? And Bhimsen said, just hold on a second, I got to finish first. So the Rakshasa was beating him. You know, he was so strong, the Rakshasa was beating him, hitting him, and he was just holding him off, I guess with his left hand, because he was eating with the right hand. He was Vedic. So he was holding him off with his left hand, just finished all the food, said, okay, now let's get ready. And so he basically had an interesting fight with the Rakshasa, and he loved these fights. I mean, he just looked forward to them his whole life. And he twirled the Rakshasa around like a firebrand, and the Rakshasa lost his life just by this twirling around. So then eventually they won Draupadi as their common wife. This is a very interesting story, because Draupadi, who was the son of Drupada we mentioned before, had gotten the benediction from Lord Shiva in her previous life that she would have five husbands, because she was so enthusiastic to get married. I see that sometimes with ladies. They really want to get married. There's no husband. There's no husband. There's no husband. And then they write me an email. Find me a husband. Find me a husband. Find me a husband. Find me a husband. And find me a husband. And I say, I'm a sannyasi. What am I supposed to do? So, but if I was Lord Shiva, I would say, okay, one, two, three, four, five. Okay. You have five times you ask, five times you get. So Draupadi had gotten that benediction in her previous life, and she didn't remember that, of course. And Vyasadeva did remember that. So when the Pandavas came to this Swayamvara of Draupadi, and it was a test with the bow and an arrow, like sometimes these tests are, the Pandavas were dressed as brahmanas and all these kshatriyas. They were unable to even string the bow, what to speak of shooting, you know, looking down at some moving water as the fish was revolving in a wheel. So they were unable to do anything. And then after they all failed and everyone was laughing at them, Arjuna, the brahmana, or dressed as a brahmana, went up and he was able to do that. And the kshatriyas were so upset that they were ready to kill Arjuna and kill all the other brahmanas that were there. But Bhimsen, he just picked up a pillar in the palace and just said, stay away, boys. And so they were unable to do anything. So Arjuna went back with Draupadi. And when he went back with Draupadi, he sort of jokingly said to his mother, I brought some alms back. And his mother said, Kunti said, you have to share all the alms, whatever you have, with your brothers equally. That's the rule here. You can't keep it all for yourself. And he said, uh-oh. And then she looked around, because she wasn't looking at him when he said that. And she said, I didn't really mean that. And but Yudhisthira said, well, whatever you said has to come true because you're the mother and you're, this is the Vedic time. You know, it was more Vedic. Nowadays, you know, people can say, I didn't really mean it. Okay, let's figure out something else. But so, therefore, Draupadi married the five Pandavas. It was revealed by Vyasadev that this is because of Lord Shiva's arrangement in the previous, at her previous birth. So then, the Pandavas then returned with Draupadi to the Kurus in Hastinapur. And it was decided that basically it would be problematic for all of them to live together. So they would have to have a separate kingdom. They were given this Kandava Prasht, which was like a desert area, which they later turned into a very beautiful oasis by the mercy of Krishna and Balaram. And Arjuna at that time was exiled for 12 years because he had, and the other Pandavas had made a promise that they would never interfere with any of their brothers if their brother was alone with their wife, common wife, Draupadi. Everybody following this so far? So, but Arjuna had to get his weapons one time when there was some attack in the kingdom. A Brahmana was being harassed. So he went and got the weapons and he had to go into exile for 12 years, sort of become a semi-Brahmachari, but he went into exile, but the Brahmachari stuff didn't last for very long. And he married Ulupi and Chitrangada and had children by them. And while he was in exile, he also kidnapped Subhadra. Much to Balaram's, you know, anger, he kidnapped Subhadra, dressed as a sannyasi. He dressed up as a sannyasi, went into Balaram's house, made eyes at Balaram's sister Subhadra, and kidnapped her. Don't invite that sort of sannyasi in your house. So, Subhadra had a son. Her son's name was Abhimanyu, and Draupadi had five sons. And there are many other stories that happened there. Eventually, Bhimsen killed Jarasandha. There was a Rajasuya sacrifice in which Shishupal was killed. And Duryodhana was insulted more and more during this Rajasuya sacrifice because he had to be the one collecting the donations for the Pandavas. You know, imagine. And he was really envious to begin with because he is like, what, like father, like son. He was a manifestation of Dhritarashtra's envy towards his brother and towards his situation. So they were so angry. And he was also insulted in the Pandavas' palace because the Pandavas' palace was arranged by Maya Danava in such a way that water looked like land and land looked like water. And so Duryodhana was just walking there and he just fell into a puddle. And then he tried to walk outside and he hit his head on the door because it was all transparent. And so Draupadi was just giggling, you know, like ladies do. Giggle, giggle, giggle. She was giggling at the whole thing. She was, hey! And Duryodhana became so angry, he said, I'm going to have to do something about this. So he had Shukuni act as his agent in a gambling match against the Pandavas. And in that gambling match, Yudhisthira was unfair because he had loaded dice. Loaded dice means the dice have a certain weight on one edge or one side, so you throw them, an expert person can throw them, and he knows how it's going to come out by the way he throws them. That's what's called loaded dice. So Shakuni threw these dice, and eventually, as we know, Yudhisthira lost everything, his kingdom, Kandava Prasht, the horses, the people. Eventually, he lost his brothers, he lost himself, and then he gambled Draupadi. And then Draupadi was lost in the gambling match. The famous story. And Draupadi, of course, is also called Krishna because she's very close to Krishna. So Duryodhana and Karna sent Dushasana, one of their brothers, to get Draupadi. So he dragged Draupadi by her hair into the middle of the assembly place. And basically, they were all saying, well, she's a prostitute anyway because she's married to five different men. So we can do anything we like with her, and also she's our servant. And so they attempted to disrobe her, and there's that famous story where Draupadi was struggling with the sari against this voracious or, you know, big kshatriya. Dushashan. And she gave up struggling, and she put her hands in her air, in the air, and she said, Krishna, save me, Krishna, save me. And Krishna provided unlimited sari. And Dushashan, he became completely overwhelmed with pulling the sari. He had carpal tunnel syndrome after the whole thing was over. Just kept pulling the sari, and someone had to open up a sari shop after that. So after this whole thing, Dhritarashtra said, all right, let's call this match a draw and give the Pandavas back their kingdom. You know, forget about this. But Duryodhana was not satisfied with this. He said, let's have an all-or-nothing match later on. And so they had an all-or-nothing match later on. That means just one throw of the dice. And if we win, Duryodhana said, we will go into exile. If you lose, if we win, you go into exile. And if we lose, you go into exile. We go into exile, sorry. So they had this match, and as we know, the Pandavas lost. And for 13 years, they would go into exile, 12 of which it could be an open exile. 1 year, it would be hidden exile. And if they were discovered during that 13th year, guess what? They have to go another 13 years into exile. It would be like an eternal exile. You know, 13 years of the last year always would be the year incognito. So Bhishma had taken many vows during these gambling matches. One vow was to not rest until he drank the blood of Dushashan. Not Bhimsen, I'm sorry, Bhimsen, not Bhishma. And also he vowed to break the thighs of Duryodhana. So, let's see. How can I make the story short? So in exile, the Pandavas acquired more weapons, especially Arjuna acquired celestial weapons from Lord Shiva and then from Indra. He learned how to dance in the heavenly planets to become a dancing teacher. And somehow or other, he offended Urvasi because Urvasi was interested in him and he wasn't interested in having a relationship with her. So she cursed him to become a eunuch. And that curse was later reduced to 1 year when they would be incognito in Virat's palace so that Arjuna could be a dancing teacher as a eunuch and not discovered. Bhima also met Hanuman, his brother at that particular point, and Hanuman offered to become the flag of Arjuna in the battle of Kurukshetra, Arjuna's chariot, of course. And that flag later on killed many soldiers. It's described in the Mahabharata that Hanuman roared in the flag so loudly that many soldiers just fainted and died just from hearing Hanuman's roar. So Duryodhana, while the Pandavas were in exile, he tried to humiliate the Pandavas in several ways. And one time he was captured by the Gandharvas and rescued by Arjuna. And so he was so humiliated at that time, rather than humiliating the Pandavas, that he decided to fast until death and kill himself. And as he was fasting until death, all these demons appeared to him and said that you're one of us. And your business is to carry out this war and kill the devotees or kill the devas. And we will empower you. And we will also enter into Grandfather Bhishma's consciousness and Dronacharya's consciousness and pollute it so that they will fight against the Pandavas. And Prabhupada explains that Grandfather Bhishma and Drona, their consciousness became polluted because they were eating food cooked in Duryodhana's kitchen. So it's very important. You are what you eat. So if you eat food cooked by someone with bad consciousness or in someone's kitchen where there's bad consciousness, your mind becomes weaker and wicked. And then you can be susceptible to these influences, like lower influences or demoniac influences. So Drona, Bhishma, and Karna, it said, will be possessed by demons. And so then Duryodhana got very happy. He said, joy, just what I wanted. But then he tried to hurt the Pandavas another time by sending Durvasa Muni and 10,000 disciples to take prasadam from the Pandavas. And he knew that Durvas had a bad temper. That, in fact, that's what Durvas means. So he sent them when they were real hungry. So when they got there, Draupadi was really in anxiety because the Pandavas had all eaten and she had a pot that could provide unlimited food, but only before the Pandavas and herself had eaten, and they had already eaten. So she didn't know what to do. She sent them to take a bath. Durvasa and 10,000 disciples to take a bath. And while they were taking a bath, she cried out for Krishna, 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 please come. Krishna came, and Krishna said, "What do you have for me to eat?" And she thought, "Oh, ma, I got a bigger problem now. I can't feed Krishna either." And Krishna said, "Yes, you have something." He took a little speck of food from the pot, ate it, and therefore Durvas and all of his associates, they became filled to the brim. Their stomachs became distended, and they just couldn't eat anymore. And they were by the river, and they thought, "We don't want to go back and offend them by not eating anything." So they ran away. Because Durvasa had previously had experience with offending Vaishnavas, particularly with Ambarish Maharaj. So he thought, "This is deja vu, Prabhu. It's time to hit the road." So he and his associates and 10,000 disciples, they ran as fast as their legs would carry them. So many other instances, like Jayadrath trying to kidnap Draupadi. And he got caught and got a shave and a haircut. You know, 5 little tufts on his hair. And he took so many vows and austerities to try to kill the Pandavas later on, but he was unable during the Battle of Kurukshetra. And the final year, the Pandavas had to hide in the kingdom of Virat. Yudhisthira became a gambling teacher. His name was Kanka, and Bhimsen became the head cook. That's what he liked to do. His name was Balaba, and Arjuna became Brihanala, the dancing teacher. And Nakula became Arishtanami, took care of the cows, and Sahadev took care of the horses. I'm sorry, I got that reverse. Sahadev took care of the cows, and Nakula took care of the horses, and Draupadi became the hairdresser. So while they were hiding out in this kingdom, there was this one brother of the queen. His name was Kichika. He tried to have an affair with Draupadi, and he was later on killed by Bhima. He was actually pulverized into the shape of a basketball. You couldn't even distinguish what was a head or whatever it was. And so then the kingdom, after the other kings heard that this Kichika was defeated because he was defending the kingdom, they tried to attack the kingdom. But the 4 Pandavas, that's without Arjuna, was Brihanala, and Virat's army were able to defeat them. And then Arjuna, who at that time became Arjuna again, not Brihanala, because the year was over, and Virat's son were able to defeat the Pandavas, the Kurus who had attacked the kingdom. So this is right before the war. So Vidura advises Dhritarashtra to give back the Pandavas what is their rightful claim. But Dhritarashtra doesn't say anything when Vidura is insulted by Duryodhana. Duryodhana insults Vidura. Vidura leaves and he goes on pilgrimage. And it's arranged that Sanjaya, that is Dhritarashtra's secretary or chariot driver, would become the messenger, that is, be able to relay to Dhritarashtra everything that was happening in the Battle of Kurukshetra, because he was given spiritual vision by Vyasadeva. Originally, Vyasadeva wanted to give that spiritual vision to Dhritarashtra, but Dhritarashtra said, "No, I can't bear to see my sons being killed." And Krishna attempted to be a peace envoy, and it didn't work out. They tried to attack and capture Krishna. Krishna had to show his universal form. Still, they didn't follow what Krishna wanted. Parashuram, Kanva Muni, and Narada Muni tried to advise Duryodhana and Dhritarashtra, but they wouldn't listen to them either. Krishna also appealed to Karna, who was the firstborn son of Kunti before her marriage. She had tested out that mantra that was given to her by Durvas. And so he was the son of the sun god, as Karna. And Karna did not want to take the side of the Pandavas because he felt this loyalty towards Duryodhana and company. So Krishna tried to appeal to Karna. Kunti also tried to do the same. And Kunti was given the benediction that at the end of the battle, Kurukshetra, five of her sons would remain alive. And Karna didn't say which five, but basically it indicated that either Arjuna would be killed by him or he would be killed by Arjuna. And so, therefore, during the battle of Kurukshetra, Karna had an opportunity to basically kill the other Pandavas, but he never did because of that vow. He just, like, insulted them and went on his way trying to find Arjuna. And that's the events that preceded the battle of Kurukshetra. So, any questions or comments? Quick summary of the Mahabharata. Went a little quickly. So, no questions or comments? Rishikesh, any questions? Because if it's not exhibiting the qualities of the Brahman fully, he sort of, we would say he lost his caste, although that wasn't really recognized, because someone is understood to be a Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, or Shudra by Aguna and Karma, as Krishna says in the Gita, Chaturvarna Mayashrishtam, Aguna Karma Vibhagasha. So basically he had lost his caste. Although a Brahmin is allowed to teach martial arts. It's not prohibited for a Brahmana to teach martial arts, but a Brahmana can't be salaried. Because when a Brahmana gets salary for doing his Brahminical business, he loses his caste. Because then his advice and his preaching becomes contaminated by his own pecuniary desires, his own desire for money or his own desire for being maintained. So there's a whole story about Drona. Drona really wanted to have a comfortable situation, basically because his son Ashwatthama, which we didn't mention in this whole description, his son Ashwatthama was not really taken care of nicely when he was young. He didn't get milk, for example. His friends, Ashwatthama's friends, used to make fun of him and give him like chalk or some colored water and call it milk. And so Drona really wanted to have a nicer life for his son. That was one of the motivating factors. But because of that desire, he sacrificed his Brahminical principles. And in one sense, he lost his caste. As Prabhupada would say, Prabhupada gave an interesting story. A very interesting story. Once upon a time, there was a man who was very, very hungry. He was a Brahmin. And he went to someone's house who basically had untouchable food, or someone who, if he ate their food, he'd be contaminated, lose his caste. So he went to the person's house, and he said, "I'm hungry, I'm hungry." He was so hungry, he forgot about it, about the caste business, you know, about maintaining your Brahminical status. So the person gave him food, but he didn't have that much food. And he said, "The problem is now I've lost my caste, but I'm still hungry." So if you're going to lose your caste, don't be hungry. Or, of course, it's better to keep your caste. By caste, we don't mean the ritualistic caste system in India as it's known today. But your nature. You don't want to lose your nature. If you have a nature of a Brahmana, if you're in the mode of goodness, you don't want to risk it by doing things that would contaminate that nature. That's not caste by birth, but caste by quality. Because anybody of any quality can of a higher quality can lose that higher quality by bad association. Witness the story of Ajahnmeel. He was a Brahmin, and he became completely enamored with a prostitute, and therefore he lost his caste because of that. So any of us, if we're Brahmins or whatever, Kshatriyas or Vaishyas, if we meditate, contemplate, associate wrongly, we can actually lose our particular status, our higher caste, or higher class, or higher consciousness. So, I think that's enough, because we've been speaking for over an hour. I try to go rather quickly. We didn't touch upon all the details, but next week we'll talk about the actual Bhagavad Gita. It was spoken on the battlefield of Kurukshetra to encourage Arjuna to fight, rather than just like sit back and give up. Because his fighting was done for religious principles to carry out Krishna's mission of Brichanaya Sadhanam Vinashaya Cha Dushkritam. All right, thank you very much. All glories to the foundation of the Prabhupada, to the Prabhupada Ki Jai.